Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We've got good, bad, crazy martinis for you as usual, though we start with the bad today. And, Jim, we had hopes that things were moving in the right direction as it pertained to Marco Rubio, who, of course, was the most conservative member of the Gang of Eight. But in the last couple of weeks, he says, hey, this bill that made it out of committee, if there's not serious changes on the floor in terms of border security, I might not actually be able to vote for this thing. Now he's going on Univision and saying essentially that, no, legalization is actually coming first. I guess it doesn't mean that he's not still committed to border security. But the thing most conservatives are talking about, of course, is so let's secure the border, make sure that it is secure, not just approve a plan, but make sure it's actually working. And then we can start focusing on the folks who are already here. But on Univision, Rubio says, let's be clear, nobody is talking about preventing the legalization. The legalization is going to happen. That means the following will happen. First comes the legalization, then come the measures to secure the border, and then comes the process of permanent residence. Jim, I think you got a lot of conservatives who are disappointed today.
It is. And the idea that, you know, Rubio is a guy with a bright future ahead of him. And some people might say, oh, how can you write him off based on this? But look, by his own standards, he was articulating not too long ago, this bill isn't doing what he wanted it to do. I think you put this in the context of the IRS scandals, of the NSA scandals, of the State Department scandals, and Bengal. We have a massive crisis of faith in our government right now, that they will not keep their promises and not do what they're supposed to do. So any type of a deal that represents, you know, I get what I want first, and you might get what you want sometime down the road, you know, there's a reason most conservatives are going to be very skeptical of this. And I think he's really kind of boxed himself, you know, put himself into a corner here by basically having to believe, you know, having to make this leap of faith that the government will secure a border that has failed to secure for the past 30 years. So Rubio appears to be on the verge of making a very big mistake here.
No, it's clearly the case. And, you know, as Chuck Grassley has been saying throughout this debate, he supported the amnesty back in 1986, which did contain strong border security measures, and the government simply never enforced them. So I go back to a phrase that George W. Bush mangled several years ago, Jim. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me, you can't fool us again. I believe is exactly how George W. Bush said it. And I think that's where we are on this story right now.
Don't get fooled. That's where you are.
Oh, that was one of the great moments of Bush malapropisms. Anyway, on to martini number two, which is actually the good martini, and this one is admittedly watered down. But as we're shaking our heads at Marco Rubio's position on this issue, ABC News is reporting that the Democrats are not in lockstep on this. Now, they probably will be for the most part on the cloture vote, which is expected for later today. But when it comes to final passage, which will also need 60 votes, they're specifically profiling four Democrats, one of which is an independent, Bernie Sanders, who could end up going against this legislation. In addition to Sanders, who is kind of different than the other three on this list, but that's pretty much true of any list he's on, Mark Pryor of Arkansas, who's up for re-election this year, Max Baucus, who knows what he's going to do since he's not running for re-election next year, and Joe Donnelly of Indiana, who's been pretty much against amnesty, but he's got a long time before he's up for re-election in 2018. So, Jim, I know your general philosophy is don't depend on Democrats to do the right thing, but at least there's a tiny glimmer here?
Yeah, it's a rebuilding day for the good martini. I mean, you know, and they list, look, you know, there are a bunch of other red state Democrats who are probably going to feel a certain anxiety on this. Heidi Heitkamp of North Dakota, Mary Landrieu of Louisiana, Kay Hagan. NBC News lists of being of Louisiana. She's actually from North Carolina, and John Tester of Montana. Maybe all these folks begin to feel some pressure. My guess is that, you know, what they will fall back on is the line we've heard from Rubio and a couple other folks in a very press meeting is, you know, well, look, we can't just do nothing. And the problem is that when you think a bill is going to make something worse on the area you care about, i.e., you know, a de facto amnesty, by the way, Marco Rubio's words, not mine, from a few years ago, and it's not going to improve things on border security, well, then heck yeah, you can do nothing. You know, I mean, if you don't think, you know, basically they're saying is something that makes the situation worse is better than doing nothing. And I, you know, no. If you think the other options are to make things the problem more complicated and more bad and tougher to solve, well, then by golly, you know, yes, you know, you do want to do nothing. I think what more specifically is that, look, and something that I've, you know, maybe whenever this topic comes up, we got to make this point. Look, If you had a genuinely secure border that there is a broad bipartisan consensus about, I think most Americans would approach the issue of a path to citizenship for those currently in the country illegally differently. And you'd then be able to see, you know, once the government demonstrated it could do one task, i.e., you know, secure the border, the next task before it would be, okay, you have these 11 million people. Some of them are not bad people. Some of them are genuinely good people, all the valedictorians who get spotlighted whenever the DREAM Act comes up and things like that. Somebody who could say, look, here's Manuel the busboy. Manuel the busboy is not going to take your job. Manuel the busboy is not out to, is not a member of a gang. He's not, you know, he's a good citizen, takes care of his neighbors, takes care of his neighborhood. He's a good guy. Americans will be open to a path to citizenship for Manuel the busboy after you deport the gangbangers and the gang members and the drug smugglers and the drug dealers and, you know, the people smugglers and all the different people who are involved. Look, most of these 11 million people are probably perfectly fine folks who have broken the law. If right now we have no faith in our government's ability to sort out all that stuff, Greg, if only we had like some giant computer system that monitored absolutely everything everybody ever did over, that they ever typed, ever did in the message on their phones. If we had something like that, we could sort through all these people and figure out the you know, dangerous criminals from the folks who want a better life and who might, if they paid a fine and learned English and passed a citizenship test and all that stuff, might be, you know, become good American citizens. So situation looks bad. Maybe these Democrats will get nervous in the final hours, but kind of a thin read for our good martini today.
Yeah, yeah. The only one they've quasi come through for lately is the gun bill, but that even that one may not be completely dead yet. It's interesting, the parallels to the NSA story, and it comes down to, do you trust your government to do what they say they're going to do? And a lot of this bill is a little bit reminiscent also of Obamacare in that it gives apparently a lot of discretion to Janet Napolitano or whoever is going to be Secretary of Homeland Security down the road to implement things how they see fit. And if you have trust in that, well, then you have a lot more trust than I do.
I'm sure she'll handle the implementation of border security just as well as Kathleen Sebelius is handling the implementation of Obamacare, right? I mean, implementation is really the bread and butter of this administration, right?
You know? Yeah, it's hard to imagine they could do it any better. All right, on to martini number three now. And speaking of NSA, we go back to Edward Snowden. His story has evolved a little bit over the last 24 hours. First of all, he's apparently no longer in Hong Kong, and that's assuming he was ever there in the first place. No one's really sure where he is. Booz Allen Hamilton decided to go public with the fact that he's out of a job, darn it. Way to
dropping the hammer, you know.
And then, of course, you got the firestorm going here. But, Jim, you'd think that given the NSA's abilities that we now know about, thanks to Mr. Snowden, that they would actually know where he is.
A couple of developments in this in the last 24 hours. And this was, you know, my first nomination for the crazy martini, because each detail we learn makes this seem crazier and crazier. As I wrote in the Morning Jolt today, you can kind of look at this guy and find him kind of ridiculous and still be glad that we now know about this NSA system. It's possible this is a story with no heroes, that Snowden may have done. You know, first of all, it's fairly clear he broke the law. I have a hard time believing in his noble motives, considering how he ran to Hong Kong. A lot of people wondering if he's got some sort of connection to the Chinese government as is. Thirdly, when he starts talking about how Hong Kong having a strong tradition of free speech, apparently he never read anything when he was at the NSA about foreign countries and all that stuff. So, what, you know, so each time you're like, oh my God, you know, what a terrible guy. Well, wait a second. The more terrible he is, the dumber the NSA looks for hiring this guy and then entrusting him with all of our most secret stuff. Like, don't, you know, the headline of the Morning Jolt today was like, don't cry to us. You guys hired this goofball. What does that say about you guys? And, you know, apparently he had been in the job for like several months before they gave him the keys to the kingdom and all the most important stuff that they had. You listen to the statement he gave to the Guardian reporters. I mean, he sounds like he's got a monstrous ego that only he understood what the government was doing and his coworkers couldn't listen to him. But how often do you hear that, huh, Greg? My coworkers wouldn't listen to me, you know. He may be a guy who sounds a little bit more like the guy in Office Space who mutters that he's going to burn the building down because they took his stapler. And yet at the same time, we're still left with a, you know, massive invasion of Americans' privacy, basically a system which basically has the government collect everything on everyone and then sort through that to find terrorists instead of starting from the terrorists and work their way out. And then the second thing is that, you know, this is all happening under a president who had no problem demagoguing the hell out of this stuff under the Bush administration. Only today, as I wrote it on Campaign Spot, Hillary Clinton talking about the secret program spying on Americans. Greg, can you imagine it? Oh, if only we got Hillary Clinton in the executive branch. That would put a stop to it right then, right?
Absolutely. Just to follow up on the Office Space analogy, I think Milton's actually the anti-Snowden here because, as you'll recall, he actually stopped the discovery of the rounding off the penny scam rather than exposing it to the
entire world.
That's
true. When you're not as good as when you fall short of his standard for secret keeping. One of the things kind of frustrating about this discussion is if you're like me, you think that the NSA, you know, this prison program is a very big deal and very much worthy of public debate. And I understand the poll numbers are saying most Americans are kind of shrugging at this. But I think, you know, if you phrase the question, are you comfortable with the government looking at all of your emails, all of your Facebook postings, all of your social media networks and recording not the content, but every call you make, tracking you on your GPS device on your phone, I think more Americans would be a little more concerned about that. Snowden may be kind of a lunatic, and it kind of makes for a funny story, and we can make fun of the guy, and you know he does seem like a weirdo, but at the same time, he's kind of a side issue. Because again, even if he is the biggest nut job in the history of the world, he still worked at NSA, and that still kind of puts a lot of blame back on NSA for how they work. So.
And of course, some people are saying now he might be staying in China, and if so, if he ends up helping their government understand our systems, that could be very damaging. Other people say maybe Iceland, you know, because they have very liberal laws in terms of protecting people seeking asylum. Julian Assange says go to South America. So, Jim, we're pretty sure he's still on the planet.
Are we sure, Greg? Are we sure? Narrow it down.
Come on, Prism. Do something. Do your job.
So right now, somewhere deep in Fort Meade at the NSA headquarters, somebody's hitting the side of a monitor. Okay, come on. Blue screen of death. We never should have run Windows.
Jim? Fascinating day as always. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us again on Wednesday for the next edition of the 3 Martini Lunch.